Jerry Bepko has been a superb performer in a whole host of occupations, as Mickey laid out for you. I can testify, perhaps uniquely in this room, that as great as he was in all those other pursuits, he could not have been more talented or expert or productive than he was as a professor of contract law back in 1970. A lot of us believe that we'd never had and never again would have a better classroom teacher than Professor Bepko, or as my seatmate said, called you Sergeant Bilko. I'm grateful to the presenters Mickey assembled. There's a common denominator here other than comedic brilliance. And that is that each of these four people, if you didn't notice this, suspended spectacular careers in the private sector and other walks of life in order to give of themselves to public life in this state. Anything good that has happened in the last 5 years is entirely due to those people who have stepped forward. No better examples are available than these. As we all know, nothing of consequence for the good ever happens in this world because of one person. Only when, through some good fortune or chemistry, the right people are willing to step forward and offer themselves. And that's what these people did, and I hope you will indulge me by offering them collectively your applause. And I'm incredibly honored by the presence tonight of Abraham Foxman, a genuine legend of this, the greatest of causes for so very, very long. And I know he's here because the incorrigible Maurer said, you want me to chair this dinner, you've got to come out personally. But whatever got him here, it's a great privilege for all of us. And of course, for me, I had actually met him once before long ago, but he came right up and greeted me by name before I could say hello to him. And I said, "Well, Mr. Foxman, that how marvelous of you to remember after so long." And he said, "Well, to be honest, I'm not that good with faces, but I never forget a suit." That I should be selected by this organization for this particular recognition means more to me than I will be able to convey. I will try in these brief moments, but I want you to know that. On my way out the door, literally, my assistant, my longtime assistant, Maggie, reminded me, this is, however, is only the second greatest compliment of its kind that I have probably been offered. I had forgotten this, but she reminded me that a bosom buddy from college days, now Dr. Mark Eig of suburban Washington, D.C., still a very, very close friend, said, I guess to her about me, he said, "Daniels is the smartest guy I ever met in my life who wasn't Jewish." Now that is a compliment. I recognize it probably places me like number 1,590 something on his list of smart guys, but I'll take it. You know, that's really terrific. In all seriousness, nice nights like this, occasions like this come along sometimes in this job. I think often they're ex officio. It's not about you. It's the position in public employ that you temporarily have, but this one is very, very special, and it brought to mind that wonderful phrase that His Honor Richard Daley, the Mayor Richard I, once said on some like occasion. He said, "Tonight I honestly feel I have reached the pinnacle of success." And I hope it's not inappropriate to intrude a few more serious reflections on what's been a fun night. And I don't want to ruin it by this. Somebody sent me a clipping from a little bitty paper in Southern Indiana. It was about the passage of about the funeral of a local citizen of, I guess, some renown. And the person writing the story said that at the gravesite, unfortunately, one of those carrying the casket stepped in a hole and broke his ankle. Said the it cast a pall over the entire occasion. That I do not seek to do. But this is a rare evening. It was a rare chance to focus one's thoughts on a subject that frequently comes to my mind, but that I won't have a better opportunity to reflect on publicly. So permit me if you will. You know, the highest ambition, it seems to me, of any great cause is to pursue successfully its own obsolescence. That is, to work itself out of business, to succeed so thoroughly that there's no longer any need. I've been associated, for instance, with an organization that for many decades has sought to teach young people the history, the philosophy of free institutions, and to fill in any gaps that might be there in their education, and really to promote the idea of human freedom as the best way to organize societies and protect human dignity and produce peace in the world. There was a little window of time not long ago when you thought such organizations might have succeeded and could disband. It's clear now that was premature. History did not end, as some had forecast. I've just been thinking about the fact that I might have thought at many points in my life that ADL would finally work its way out of being, that the evil, that the poison of anti-Semitism would finally be erased from this country and one would hope from the world. Many of you know that Daniel's family, my sister Deb was here, and I arrived from the American South back in the late 50s. Nobody knew the term then, but it was an immediate exercise in what we now people call diversity training. We landed in the middle of an all-Jewish neighborhood. It was one of the best things that could ever have happened to me. I mean, I made some lifelong friends there, but all my buddies, my whole paper route, everybody, I think, on the school bus were Jewish guys and girls. And this is a true story. One blustery winter's day, my dad told me, you could still do this back then, to take the Christmas tree out, this is about New Year's, and burn it. And I got playing football in the snow with some of my friends, and it blew away, and I thought I was off the hook. Somebody brought it back. It could only belong to one house on our street. Got in big trouble. I went to college. Quotas, hidden dark secret of the Ivy League, pretty much been finally gotten rid of. Every Jewish kid had just as much chance to go to schools like ours as they deserved. I got there. Our class got there right on the heels of the Six-Day War. Everybody was thrilled with what Israel had accomplished in its own behalf. It was like America had survived or successfully defended itself. And I would never have guessed those many years ago that as it approaches now, I guess in just 3 or 4 years, it's centennial, that the Anti-Defamation League would still have such an enormous challenge. All that seemed to be on its way out of American life and good riddance and about time. But now what one writer has called the oldest hatred is back again in new forms and from very new and strange quarters. We didn't get a chance to hear the speech that Mr. Foxman prepared for tonight, but I'm going to go get it, and you should too, because I bet it catalogs as so many other folks have recently. The astonishing virulence and widespread nature of anti-Semitism in this world, it is a matter of both surprise and also enormous alarm to me, and I hope to you. And how strange to me that sectors and people who I once thought of as allies of the Jewish people in the fight against anti-Semitism have changed uniforms and changed sides completely. Think about the international community. One of my early memories of living on West 73rd Street in Indianapolis was that on Halloween, my buddies and I went out and got and collected candy. The Jewish kids went out and collected money for UNICEF. I thought they were nuts, by the way. But the UN today, the UN for which they gave up their Halloween, is a hotbed of animosity and lies and hatred for the state of Israel and the people that created it. The African American community, it must be said. Who were the boys of Mississippi? Who died in Mississippi for civil rights? Who populated among the white people who went and joined with African Americans in the struggles of the late 60s? It was young Jewish people, as much as anybody. And yet, whether it's Mr. Farrakhan or others, are there things said these days that ought not be said in our land and to come from people who should know better? The academic left. There were the intellectual leaders, some of the most active activists on behalf of the causes we in this age call liberal or left wing, were quite often sincerely motivated teachers and students and thinkers from the Jewish community. And yet, some of the most vigorous attacks these days on the state of Israel, its right to exist, its legitimacy, and on the communities of Jewish people who support it come from there. And then most dangerously, a very large sector of one of the great religions of this world, openly, unapologetically committed to threatening and hoping for the extinction of the state of Israel. Not a fringe movement of that religion, but a mainstream portion. And it just simply must be called for what it is. We have tried hard in our administration to welcome into the Indiana family everybody. And that includes the Muslim community of this state. I've held the first iftar dinners ever at the governor's residence. We have had regular meetings. And we have some wonderfully admirable people. I was so proud in the wake of the Fort Hood atrocity that, as far as I could see, as far as I know, the first statement, clear statement of denunciation came from the Indiana Muslim Alliance. It said, this is not the faith we believe in. This is unacceptable in every way. But that has not been the universal reaction. The congressman from the district in which we are meeting dismissed it as a matter of mental illness, ignoring the fact that there once was a theory called Nazism that encouraged openly hatred of the Jewish people, encouraged violence against the Jewish people. and undoubtedly induce people of mental, who are mentally challenged, to do terrible things. Once again, we have this occurring in this world. If old allies have now become enemies, it is certainly more important than ever that new allies step forward. And I want to say to those people who are not of the Jewish faith, this is our fight too. This is as American a fight as I can imagine. And it is regrettable that too many people who see the world, see many of the world's issues, as I do, have sat out the struggle against anti-Semitism in the past. Maybe not been hostile to it, but have not participated in it. Left it to others. Left it to Mr. Foxman and brave people like that. And I would say to people of my faith, of my general philosophy, of government, of my political party, that's not acceptable. This cause needs every friend it can get. It is facing threats as real, as determined as any it faced in the 20s and 30s and in the centuries before. And if we've been held back because of disagreements over what I would term lesser matters, then those should be subordinated or set aside, or we can just agree to disagree. But in the face of the real dangers of today, it is just so necessary that all friends of freedom and all friends of justice call it as it is. Do not let slurs, let alone incitements to hatred and violence, pass unremarked because of fear that you're not being correct enough. We're so blessed in this town, if you don't know. Those of you who, and I hope it's all of you, who have read the book Defiance, who've seen the movie about the heroic Bielski brothers and their successful partisan activities, saving hundreds and hundreds of Jews in the toughest days of World War II. You know, we have a man in this town, Meyer Bronicki, who was part of that. If you get a chance, be sure to meet him while we still have him. You're talking to history when you do. In the book Defiance, there's a term, Malbush, which, as I understood it from the book, described a person of intellectual gifts and great talent, but who was totally unsuited to the task of being a partisan, of fighting, of surviving in the woods, that hard, dangerous, and difficult work. Brought a whole new set of elites to the front, those who had been the peasants before in many cases. Let's not anyone here be a Malbush in the effort to defend freedom, to contest anti-Semitism. We need people of intellectual gifts, we need people though of courage, and who are willing to do the hard and the dirty work. I have some great news for you. Some proud news, and I've gotten permission to share it. I stumbled onto it as I was thinking about tonight, reading and rereading some things I've saved about the new anti-Semitism. I called Dr. Alvin Rosenfeld down at Indiana University, who had given two speeches that I had in my file, just to see if he had any thoughts about it, the topic. And he gave me the greatest news, and I'm so pleased that President McRobbie of IU is here. When by his leave and Dr. Rosenfeld's, I share it with you. But very, very soon, on the campus of Indiana University, will be born a new institute, the Institute for the Study of contemporary anti-Semitism. I am so proud that that is happening and happening here in our state. Michael, thank you very, very much. I just look forward to the work that is done there, the scholarship that occurs, and I hope the frontal response to a would-be new wave of terror, so that we don't have to ask what if in our later days, and our children never have to ask it of us. It is surprising to me, and sad in its way, that America and the world still needs an anti-defamation league. But it's so uplifting and inspiring to me that you are all here. People in this job of mine are always thanking you for when they shouldn't. They're thanking you for just doing things you were hired to do. Being thanked tonight for any paltry thing I have ever done in this effort, I think goes too far. I do. I will leave here, though, like Oscar Schindler, thinking about what I might, the more I might have done, in my case at least, and yours, the more we all can do. I hope you'll go out of here with that same motivation, so that the oldest hatred is confronted in our state and in our nation with new energy and new courage. Thank you for this recognition, but mostly for your commitment to this most urgent of causes. Thank you.